This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to Buy the Book. I'm Sharmila Ganesan. And as always, with me, my fellow lover of images and words, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
And today we are going to be focusing on something that's quite dear to the both of us. And in our opinion, something we don't get to talk about as often as we'd like to, which is comics and graphic novels. And so joining us is someone who works squarely in that industry. We have Amir Hafizi, who is the co-founder of Maplay Comics. Thanks for joining us, Amir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I thought we'd first start by talking about how you developed your love for comics and graphic novels, because certainly for me, it was something that I came to as an adult.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're more or less on the same boat. I actually had a deprived childhood. My parents gave me very little pocket money and I didn't have access to comics. So when I got my first salary, the first thing I bought was actually the first trade paperback of the Sandman comics, Preludes and Nocturnes by Neil Gaiman. So it became a thing. I spent, there was a book allowance at a place where I work. So I spent about 200 ringgit a month just buying comics mostly. And that continued for a few years until today, actually. I still buy comics. I bought one comic last night because someone was promoting it on Twitter.
Lynn, what about you? When did you sort of first become a fan of comics or graphic novels?
I mean, that's a tough one, right? It depends on what we're talking about, because I think for whatever reason, Neil Gaiman and Sandman tends to be the name that comes up a lot. But if you ask me what I remember reading as a child, then it would be Archie Comics, it would be Doraemon, it would be books like that, you know, things that are aimed at children to tweens, and then sometimes I think adults tend to engage with it more as an act of nostalgia. But I don't know how I graduated from that into graphic novels. And for that matter, I think even the kind of terminology that we're using, right, the distinction between comic books and graphic novels is porous at best.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you're right that precisely because of that, I totally read Archie when I was growing up, but I didn't even think of it as something being within this sphere until you literally just said it, because I often tend to think of my introduction of it. I first read Mouse when I was, I think, in my early 20s, and that was my introduction into, what the graphic form can do for storytelling, I think, in some ways.
Amir, I am curious, what drew you to Preludes and Nocturnes for your first buy? What was it about it that made you think, okay, this is the one?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Having a deprived childhood and not having any money, I had to rely on other things. I had to be creative. So one of the sources of enjoyment for comics would be the pages of The Sun magazine. The Sun had this fantastic thing. I think Kalyon Rahan was part of it and whatever else. And they had this... Every Friday, there were these pages and pages of these trade paperbacks in the thing itself. And there are comics reviews, games reviews, and stuff like that. One of them was the Sandman comics. And I just immediately fell in love and I said, where is this thing? Where can I get it? And I found out it's very expensive. So I couldn't buy it. So I waited until I got a job. Then I would buy it. But it started, Sandman comics started with that and also with several Kuala Lumpur friends. I had some, I went to a hostel. So I had some KL friends who collected books of magic. They had Lady Death at some point, bit a bunch of these Wild Storm Universe, whatever else. And they also had some of the mature comics. And I had that. So that's that. And then when I was in college, waiting to get a job and whatever else, I actually downloaded English Master's Thesis based on these comics. So I've read people studying Watchmen, V for Vendetta on a literary level, that saying that, oh, there's this thing. For example, there is an issue in Watchmen where it's called A Fearful Symmetry, in which the drawings, the panels, and the themes are actually symmetrical. So I thought, wow, it's a thing. And Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis, all these people have been talking about how the potential of comics, what they can do, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And it shows how a very small group of people can do. These people were basically the British comics people who were brought into the States by Karen Berger for Vertigo and whatever else. They said, oh, you know, we brought the best in the UK. But according to them, they said they were only like these five or six guys writing and a bunch of other people drawing. So that's why they're the best, because it's very small.
Speaking of that small group of people, you co-founded Mapley Comics about 7 years ago, 2013?
2014, actually.
2014, right.
I blackmailed my co-founder after I had a heart attack. I said, you know, emotional blackmail. I said, I'm going to die, let's do this thing. Because he wanted to do it. He dragged me to register SSM. Then we, you know, I had a heart attack. I said, hey, let's do this before I die. I didn't die. So we've been doing it for about 7 years.
So I was wondering whether you now have a sense of what kinds of graphic novels or comics that Malaysians tend to gravitate to as readers.
Here's the thing. It's a hodgepodge of very small niches. So there are some people who like lighter reading. There are some people who like literary stuff, fantasy, shonen style, which is more of the young boys. Shoujo, here's the thing. It is my great failure to this day to convince anyone, any of the artists, to do a straight up shoujo romance title. Nobody wants to do it. And I'm like, okay, so one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm trying to do my own shoujo. I'm a guy. I shouldn't be doing it, but fine. There's no one else. So I'm going to try and push some of those romance stuff. But talking about that, what the question about... a bunch of people actually asked me this in the past few weeks. What genre that people would like to get? There's so far, as far as I can see, there's none that's going to like really capture the Malaysian imagination. Because, and we have a lot of people doing a bunch of stuff. Ernest Ng is doing a fantastic work with COVID Ball. There's also a lot of people, actually, a lot of younger Malaysian artists, they're going online. They're no longer doing publishing stuff, which is fantastic, which is fine. I think one of the forerunners we got to publish one of her collections is Fishball with My Giant Geek Boyfriend. But there's also a lot of people like Pochit Fingernails. We published two of his stuff, Paradigma Guru, but he's also now big in Tapas. He did Whispers of the King. Whispers of the True King, WOTK. So he's getting paid there. He's making money there. And I recently, today, I was reviewing, he's a Malaysian artist, but the thing is half German. So I think it's a she, again. And it's on Webtoons, Tapas, all these things. These people are actually making use of all the platforms available to them. There's this girl, Fried Rice, the girl did Fried Rice, Erica, I think, and she just did it on her own out of nowhere and she won. Remina, actually, she was nominated. I think Erica won. And I was like, and she came just like, so it goes to show that there are artists, there are people doing it. In terms of volume, hitting that critical mass, not yet. But it's as long as we have it, then we can cultivate these audiences. If people discover these things, if we get people to discover these titles, and if they like it, then it would be fantastic for the scene.
So what would you say are some of the distinctive or perhaps unique aspects of the Malaysian graphic novel industry? And I think more crucially, where do you see most of the influences coming from? You know, is it primarily, are people drawing more from, say, a manga tradition? Are people drawing more from the kinds of names that we've been talking about? Where are you seeing these influences, and how are they kind of being reprocessed and brought out in the Malaysian art form?
Safe to say that we don't have a Malaysian style. In fact, this thing has been talked about for 20, 30 years. There are people say, what's the Malaysian style? There's no Malaysian style because there's not enough Malaysian comics, to put it bluntly, I think. That's my opinion. Because in order for you to have a style or a dominant style or to say that there's a movement going here or there, you need to have a bunch of them. And so far, our biggest problem right now is we don't have enough. We need more. But like I said, it's like hodgepodge. There's like niches everywhere. There are people working exclusively in the Webtoons vertical scrolling thing where they don't really think about paneling. So it's just like, But there are people who actually follow that rule. But I just wrote a review. This girl, I really loved her paneling. Her paneling is classic traditional Western comics paneling, where if you want to show that somebody's distressed, so the panels become narrower at certain parts, it becomes angular. So it's fantastic. It's called Anfanga. That's why I didn't remember. The artist is called Memai. M-E-M-A-I. I mean, she's brilliant. I love her style. I wish I could share it with you later. via links or whatever else. But she goes for that kind of style. Pok Chik can do manga. People like Ayn Lavendra, she does manga style. Ernest Bro, who does COVID Ball, Fishball, who does My Jaggy Boyfriend, and Azwan Jai, Makcik Gemuk, and Apang Apam. So those people do strips. So they follow the traditional strip style. You've got a bunch of people. Faizal Tan, I think, he's also an indie artist. He does primarily European style stuff. It's not really Marvel, DC is more like the other guys, you know, Mobius and all those things. So I think in Malaysia, the good part is you can find anyone doing any style. If you go with Orin, he's teaching, I think, somehow. Or his wife is teaching. He's doing freelance. So Orin does really good digital illustrations. Rosh Faizal. Rosh does a bunch of really nice illustrations. He recently did a T-shirt with Zaflog. And I'm working right now with whom I think to be one of the best Malaysian illustrators around. It's a bit slow, but you have to wait for greatness. Because last night he just sent me some stuff, Zamzami. Zamzami, I think, has at some point, about a few years ago, he transcended the line between pop art and real fine art because he had an exhibition and all of his pieces were actually sold out. So, you know, so there's a lot. It's so varied. And Malaysians, I'm glad to say that the Malaysian artists, the youngsters, they don't care when people say, you should draw like this or that and whatever else. They don't give a damn. They're just going to draw whatever makes them happy.
We do need to take a quick break, but we are speaking to Amir Hafizi, who is the co-founder of Maplay Comics, Malaysia's very own homegrown comics and graphic novels label, because we've been dedicating this show to everything to do with graphic novels, particularly the form it takes in Malaysia. So let us know, are you a fan? Do you like reading comics? Do you call them graphic novels instead? What are some of the titles that you fancy? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to Buy the Book with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're dedicating the show to all things to do with graphic novels and comics, particularly how the genre is unfolding here in Malaysia. So joining us to talk about that is the co-founder of Maplay Comics, Amir Hafizi. So Amir, before the break, you sort of talked us through a lot of these names and titles that you enjoy. I wanted to know what you personally look for when considering what to publish.
I think Maplay Comics was set up partly like a social enterprise. It's not really a social enterprise, but partly so, because one of the main drives were these complaints by our friends who said, oh, we have these comics, but we couldn't find a publisher to take them on because of the content and censorship issues, blah, 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 policies. So I said, okay, fine, let's do this. How hard could it be? So we started a publishing company for comics, and we said, come with your comics, and they never do. Those people who complain a lot actually never do stuff, because that's the point of the thing, is to complain. It's not really to make comics. So the main criteria is to get published is to find people who actually want to do comics. We don't really, for Maplay Comics, we don't really care about what genre it is. We've published journal comics, non-fiction, fiction, fantasy, sci-fi. There's no one doing romance. Please submit a romance comic to us. We haven't published any romance, and I'm quite embarrassed by that. We've been here for 7 years. But a lot of it, apparently there's a gravitation towards travelogue comics and journal comics, they call it. In some places, like Gida Lee, which is one of the inspirations for Mimi Masood, I think. There's also a bunch of other stuff. Even in Indonesia and Japan, there's a bunch of people who do like journal comics. So John Suraya, one of our artists, actually does a very good journal comics, and it's one ongoing. So we're going to publish maybe one or two more of the titles this year. We're trying to get it finished lah, soon. So if you ask us, Maplay Comics, we publish anything that we like, basically. Now we have three people. There are two guys and one girl. So it's not going to be like a sausage fest anymore. So it's going to have that female take into it, because a lot of our clients also, readers are actually women. So we want to make sure that we don't miss anything. Just in case we don't like it, maybe another segment of the market would like it.
Something I'm quite curious about actually is something to do with what you spoke about earlier, which is this idea of critical mass, you know, the fact that perhaps there isn't really something we can say about the establishing style of Malaysian comics because of that lack of critical mass. And I'm curious about that because I think most people growing up in some form or another have tried their hand at writing or drawing comics. They might have been terrible. I know speaking for myself, they were like horrendous, you know, just terribly penciled, terribly done. But the point is, like many people, I think everyone at some point has tried to write a short story. Everyone at some point has tried to sketch out a little comic. So what do you think it's going to take then to translate that perhaps these sort of early experimentations, the interest in reading comics into actually wanting to make comics?
Well, I think platform can be one answer. There's no magic bullet, silver bullet to it. But I think platform, the availability of easy to publish platforms could be something. Because I know some people who I'm working with right now, and their early comics are horrible, actually. And I told them as such, I'm not speaking behind them, but I said, you know, these comics, I cannot publish them because the drawing is horrible. But she published them anyway, and they're online somewhere for people to read. And I asked her, why do you publish these things? She said, because it's there, because it's available. So that barrier of self-confidence, or whether people will hate me or not, I think the ease of things to be published would actually get more people to publish. We saw this in blog posts. A lot of people, I want to be a writer, but then they never do it until there's like blogs and they start blogging and stuff like that. Same thing with Twitter. Twitter is shorter and whatever else and so forth. I think platform could be one answer in order to convince people to do these things. Another thing, but there's also another thing, consideration, because it's not generating money, you see, so far. Not yet, but it's getting there. It will. As soon as we hit critical mass, some people is going to figure out a way to make money out of it. For example, in Indonesia, they use Line. So I asked the people there, I love Tahit Lalats, which is a title over there. It's a strip, like Komi Ronyo. I said, how many did you sell? They said like few tens of thousands of books, which is amazingly low for a country with a population of about 300 million, 200 million plus 300 million. I said, how come? And they said, oh, we don't make money from this. This is just whatever. They make money from selling stickers online, for example. I mean, one of the things that they do. So for those stickers, I think you pay like 3 ringgit, you get like 20 stickers, something like that. And they sold like 250,000 of those stickers. So they made like 700. I was like, wow, we don't have that here. We're using WhatsApp. It's like, no. I was really hoping that one day maybe WhatsApp would have something like that. Or maybe we can sell something on Twitter. But eventually, I think one day. And also these other things like merchandising and whatever else. We've tried our hand in merchandising. But our failures doesn't mean that other people will fail. I mean, we're not the biggest company. The biggest company would be Gempak. Gempak has had more success than anyone else in terms of comics and merchandise. So somebody will figure out a way to make money out of this as long as there's critical mass, a lot of comics, and a lot of readers of comics, I think.
So I'm hoping that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people will listen to this interview and all become converts to wanting to read comics and graphic novels. But I do realize that it can actually be quite an intimidating space. You don't know where to start. What are the ones that you should check out? For those who might actually be interested, what titles would you recommend?
Oh, that's a difficult question because it depends on the person. Some people might want to go very deep, or they want to use the comics as a statement of their being, of their identity. Some people just want to be entertained, or some people just want to relive some parts of their childhood. They might have been like me. I mean, I read bits and pieces of some comics when I was a kid. I was like, I don't know how this began and how it ended. So I began searching for it, found it, bought the whole thing, and finally, as I feel my life is complete. So in order for them to... Suggestions, I don't know. I mean... As a co-founder of Maple Comics, I would suggest picking up some stuff from Maple Comics itself, our website, maplecomics.com.my, because we publish a whole bunch of stuff. But Gempak also does a bunch of stuff. And there are also all these platforms. There's Mad Comic, it's a platform, online platform, if you don't want to buy anything first and want to have a taste of Malaysian comics. There's Tapas International, Webtoons International. Gempak has their own platform. Oh, and get this, Creative Enterprise has digitized the entire, how many, like 5,000 years worth of gila-gila. So you've got like the whole thing. They got a grant, if I'm not mistaken. So it's all up there somewhere. there was a link. I clicked on it once or twice and then never did again. But there's huge potential there if people want to read something in Malay. For the stuff in English, we've got a ton of Malaysians working on stuff in Webtoon and Tapas and Inca. We also had run-ins with Inca, worked together with them. We're publishing some of our stuff there. But to suggest any title, it depends on the person. So it depends on what they want. If they say sports or food, if it's food, Cooking Master Boy, Yakitate Japan, we don't have equivalent here. If people like strips, like last time, they might want to check out people like Mimi Masood. They might want to check out Ernest Bro COVID Ball. He's selling his second edition book right now, I think. If you want like really literary stuff, go for Raymond Ashayi, The Carpet Merchant. It's so long. I have it somewhere. I can't remember the title of her thing. And there's also Fried Rice. That's easier to remember, by Erica. And those are things that are available. So they might want to check out those things first. But I'm sure that the first thing they will see right now will be all the spoilers for Attack on Titan, which is in its final season right now. So go with that as well. That's fine.
In closing then, Amir, what has the past year been like for Maple? And what titles do you have coming out this year? What plans do you have aside from hopefully selling a million stickers at some point?
well, as with everyone else, last year has been horrible for us in terms of sales. But there were two miracles that happened. So it used to be that 70% of our income would come from bookstores, right? So bookstores suffered heavily during COVID, during MCO and whatever else. So what happened was we tried to up our digital stuff. Some publishers managed to make the transition beautifully. They retained 60, 70% of their business, only suffering like 30, 40% decrease, which is fine. We suffered a lot. But for Mumtai Comics, what happened was we were approached by these digital people who wanted some of our comics on their platform, Inca, basically. So we managed to get some funds from there. And then there was one guy who came and bought like a bunch of comics to be sold to schools in Sarawak or Sabah or something like that. So that helped us out in the thing. But we are still pushing ahead. We've always targeted like 6 titles a year. So this year we've published 2. We are targeting another 1, 2, 3. Yes, 3 or 4 more. So we are on track to publish more. Okay, in the next few weeks, we will actually be selling the 3rd and final installment of Taubat Sitanggang, the 3rd one. We're coming up with a box. We're trying to figure out the box logistics. So that's taking a bit of a thing. But there will be the 3rd one. And then John Soraya recently was quarantined. So she's writing something about being quarantined. So we hope to publish it as well. And she did a spin-off with something or whatever. I'm currently publishing the 2nd book on the Nafiri punya series. There's like 8 installments, so I hope to publish more than one this year. Fantasy Kuasa is another light novel series that we're hoping to finish this year as well. And we're also looking at some new people who submitted some works. Some might have potential, others I have to write some rejection letters later. But it's looking good. We are finally concluding the Taubat Sitanggang saga, which is always a good thing, because a lot of the Malaysian comics readers, they feel as if they have been betrayed and abused all these years by all these comics artists starting something and never finishing it. And some of them are my friends. So we are making sure that the stories are done, the stories are completed, so people can actually rest easy and not have trouble sleeping at night.
Thank you so much, Amir. We've been speaking to Amir Hafizi, who is the founder of Maple Comics, and just getting a lay of the land in terms of graphic novels, comics, both internationally and more specifically what the scene is like in Malaysia. If you'd like to check out the kind of titles that they publish, you can visit their website. That's maplecomics.com.my, maplecomics.com.my. Let us know, are you a fan of graphic novels? What are some of the titles that you read? Give us suggestions. We always love those. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Come and go. things go. Mortals flicker and flash and fade. Worlds don't last. Stars and galaxies are transient, fleeting things that twinkle like fireflies and vanish into cold and dust. But when the first living thing drew breath, he was there, waiting, with his siblings. The Endless. When the last living thing has left this universe, their task will be done. His realm is the dreaming, the world of sleep and imagination. He is Dream, Lord Morpheus, and he must learn to change or die.
And that brings us to footnotes. And as the cap for a conversation about graphic novels, we decided to go back to one of our old favorites. You've heard us talk about it here many times, The Sandman by Neil Gaiman. But more specifically, the idea of a graphic novel being adapted into an audiobook, which is what has happened to The Sandman series as of last year, to mixed receptions, I must say.
Yeah, I thought that it would be an especially good time to talk about it now, actually, because Ame specifically mentioned The Sandman being the first graphic novel that he bought. And it holds, I think, that place of pride for many people, it being the first quote-unquote literary graphic novel that many people will be exposed to. It's also the first one that most people recommend. If they say, like, hey, if you want to see the kinds of pinnacles that graphic novels can scale, then The Sandman is the place to go. And it's interesting because it is almost this adaptation, or this push of it being an audiobook, is almost completely the polar opposite of what it was originally written as, right? If you think about it, you could imagine a graphic novel then being transposed back into, say, a written form, just a regular written novel. But to take it from that to an audiobook makes it an interesting challenge, because you lose the texture of the art, you lose the paneling, you lose a lot of the things that make a graphic novel what it is.
Yes, because in a weird way, making it into a movie would be the obvious choice, or a TV show. And of course, that's coming. Netflix has already optioned it for a series.
It's the visuals.
Yes, but the audio form, I must admit, was interesting for me. I didn't mind the idea. I haven't yet listened to it, mostly because it's on Audible and it's not cheap. But I do think that so much of the pleasures of a graphic novel in particular, and a story that was conceived to be told in that form, is the visuals. That I wonder what it would be in this form, where it's just audio.
So based on the reviews that I've been reading about it, it sounds as if, broadly speaking, it is beautifully produced, and I think you wouldn't expect anything less. Audible, one of the leading names in audiobooks, and so obviously they know what they're doing. And they also assembled a stellar voice cast. There's James McAvoy as Dream, there's Taron Egerton as John Constantine, there are all these big names, people that you know can deliver. However, I think that there's a part of me that really likes the idea of it for inclusivity, right? So if you've never been able to enjoy Sandman because you might be visually impaired, for instance, then this is great. This is a way to access those stories. And Sandman, even beyond the art, there's a lot of it in there that is just really good storytelling, sometimes storytelling about storytelling, mostly that, in fact. And so it's very nice to have that be accessible to as wide an audience as possible. But I think that transposing, I don't know, I can't help but feel like you do lose something if you're not going to make something more of it. And I've read reviews that argues that it's too faithful an adaptation. So perhaps it is best if, for example, you've never read the books. But if you have, then I think in much the same way as when something is adapted onto screen and you want to see them add something more, you want to see them layer something more, then this apparently, again, you know, it's not that accessible to us here price-wise, but this apparently doesn't exactly deliver on that.
So I just also wanted to say that for me, the exciting thing was Neil Gaiman actually narrates it. That for me would have been perhaps a little bit of that push, a sort of bringing to life of his words, having him actually narrate. He's got a great voice anyway. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the things in addition to that, just really great cast, that I do think that at some point I might spring for what it costs, and or at least get a preview and see if I like it. it does tap into a market that perhaps wouldn't necessarily have read the graphic novel anyway. You know, podcasts have been repeatedly held up as being the next wave of things, right? And with things like Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces and all opening up, I do feel like audio formats are on some sort of a cusp of becoming big. And added to the fact that the series came out last year, which was, you know, the midst of a pandemic, lots of people wanted content of different forms. They were more open to formats that they possibly may not have been open to before. I must say, though, that a cynical part of me feels like this may also just be cashing in. Take something that's already popular, that already has a built-in fan base, charge. Frankly, again, I know I've mentioned the price several times, but it is not accessible to a lot of people in terms of how much it costs. And just hope that it makes you money because, hey, the fans will come, right?
Yes. And so I think that's it, right? The fans will come, but for how many different things? And I think that this is something that comic book fans, graphic novel fans are indeed sensitive to because people know that it is a strong and abiding fandom. And generally speaking, you do see people willing to show up for all these things. There is the reason that Comic-Con has become what it is over the years. But I think my hesitation has always been, I own the books. And so if I want to reassess the books, or if I want to reaccess the books, I will just do that. And the appeal of listening to it at the moment isn't strong enough for me. We've spoken before on our other shows together that sometimes I'm all talked out and I'm all listening out after a day of work here. So perhaps it's not for us.
It's 10 hours and 54 minutes just for the first three volumes, in case you're wondering.
Yes. And some of the appeal of graphic novels actually is in the speed of being able to read them. Just to say that the review that I'm referencing in talking about how it's been a little bit too on the nose is one by Susanna Polo in Polygon. And Susanna argues essentially that also in adapting it, there was no move to perhaps soften or take away or edit out some of the more troubling content of the original Sandman. And I think that opens up a whole other can of worms, right? Whether or not we should be reassessing, censoring works that were done in the 90s. But the argument that this particular writer is making is that there are some things that happen to queer characters in particular that have been much talked about, and that the adaptation simply adapts uncritically. And so I think that maybe that's something to think about, perhaps, as we move forward. The other thing is also, in general, for graphic novels and audiobooks, I don't see this as a thriving thing. I think very few graphic novels will actually be able to make the leap.
I'm just imagining, I mean, I'm going to pick another favorite, Watchmen, and I don't know whether something like that would even work as a, for all I know, it exists and I haven't heard of it, but I don't know, I don't think I want an audio version of the Watchmen because the visuals are so, so, so important to stories like that. I would say that, I mean, if we are looking at the audio format being interesting in this space of fantasy or these sorts of stories, I would love to see more effort put into creating original content that works in an audio format. And perhaps that won't feel so much like it's a cash grab.
Mm.
So we're talking about the adaptation of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, the graphic novel series, into the audiobook format. Not particular fans of the ideas ourselves, but let us know if you've listened to it, if you're looking forward to it, whether that's something you generally are excited by. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.